Golf Smarter, number 559, published on September 27, 2016, is brought to you by Golf Overnight. Now, if you're about to take a trip that includes golf, don't have your bag add to the stress of the travel. This trip, have your clubs waiting for you, not the other way around. It's not officially fall yet. Heck, we don't even change the clocks until November this year. But the FedEx Cup champ has been named. Congratulations, Rory, and thanks for proving that winning every time out doesn't matter. But playing your best to make the top five makes a difference. We're about to hit October. Football's in full swing. Baseball's going down to the wire, and hockey and basketball training camps have begun. So that must mean that the snowbirds are packing things up and going south for the winter. So fill the car with all your essentials, but ship your golf clubs to save valuable space. And when you do, don't forget Golf Overnight, especially since you're a Golf Smarter listener, which saves you 20% on your order. Use Golf Overnight to safely get your clubs to your next destination worry-free. Use our exclusive promo code and save 20%. It's G-SMART. That's G-S-M-A-R-T, and save 20% at golfovernight.com. There's a link in this episode's show notes, or click on their ad on the homepage of golfsmarter.com. Play with your imagination with author of Winning the Battle Within, Dr. Glenn Alba.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights to lower your score and raise your golf IQ. To hear the full interview and access hundreds of Golf Smarter episodes, sign up for premium access at golfsmarter.libsyn.com. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Glenn.
Great to be back, Fred.
It's great to see you again. I'm glad to see you're doing well. You got a huge smile on your face. It's wonderful. You know what? I was looking back, and this is, I think, like the fourth or fifth time you've been on the podcast. And what's really strange is the first episode that you were on is exactly 10 years ago today that we're recording this.
Oh, my.
Yep. September 26, 2006 is when we were first introduced to Winning the Battle Within.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
It's a long relationship we've been having, my friend.
Yes. Yeah, but we're still working on winning the battle within. But
yeah,
of course, we have to find out what the battle is, and then, of course, we can win it. Yeah.
Oh, you didn't tell me that. Wait a minute. You've got a secret to this that you didn't share with me in the first four times we did this. You got to identify the battle.
Well, one of them we'll talk about today is, how do I learn to play with my imagination? That's one of the battles.
Yeah.
And when we learn to do it, we're towards winning the battle. Yes. Okay.
I think playing with your imagination is such a fun topic to cover, because you know, if you're just going out there and worrying about your swing and not worrying about the target and not, you know, just focus on the contact, then you're missing out on a whole lot of golf.
I certainly agree with that.
Yeah. It's amazing to me how much imagination and creativity is required in a single round of golf, especially for those shots that you don't practice. So it's beyond imagination, creativity. It's just, well, I saw it on TV. I must be able to do this.
Well, you know, it's as we say, to be able to play in your imagination, you must understand, you know, your athletic mind. And we have to understand, you know, we do have three minds in which we train with and which we perform with. And we understand that, then we can make, that's the next step towards being able to play in the athletic mind, which would mean to play with your imagination, where we see and feel and hear, and we play in our senses. That's part of our mind that works 1,000 times faster than our thinking brain. And so we have to get there. Of course, we do know what it is, and we knew what we have to know more about how we get there and to stay there consistently.
The consistently is, I think, is the struggle. Well, because you're always second guessing yourself on the golf course, aren't you? I mean, aren't most amateurs doing that? I don't know about the pros, but I would think that amateurs are second guessing themselves nonstop on what they just did, what they're about to do, what they're thinking about doing.
Well, our golf industry promotes that. It promotes it. In a couple of workshops that we've done, we call it the coach of the future. The coach of the future is going to be much more than a fix-it coach. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a protagonist for self-discovery and for self-coaching. In order to do that, he's going to have to coach in a different way. Now, that doesn't ever undervalue the importance of fixing things. But if you really want to play at the highest level possible, that it will allow that your skills allow you, you've got to go beyond that. And the coach of the future has to be a person that can lead you and give you those opportunities so you can play with the flourish and unleash your imagination.
You know, we think of coach, we think of people that you've worked with, like Pete Carroll, right, in football, and you think of and Bill Walsh.
Yes.
Great coaches. But yeah. It's as motivators and strategists, which is very different than you have in golf as when you have to coach yourself.
Well, one of the things that we want to have our coaches learn to do, and certainly Pete Carroll personifies that, is we call self-coaching. So we can provide an environment where a person can learn more about, for example, wouldn't it be great, Fred, that you can walk into practice, see the first tee with a swing you can trust?
Yes.
Well, okay. I can help you with that. Wouldn't it be great if you had a procedure that you used, we call a pre-shot routine, that would give you the best chance to hit the best shot possible? Wouldn't that be great?
That would be awesome.
Wouldn't it be great that you had a procedure that would allows you to bounce back from difficult situations when you miss shots? Wouldn't that be great?
That would be great.
Wouldn't it be great also that you had some skills that allow you to enjoy the times in between? As our Marin County friend, Michael Murphy, tells us in Golf in the Kingdom, if you can enjoy the times in between in golf, you can enjoy the times in between in life. Well, 90% of the time we're in between in golf, aren't we?
Yeah.
So if self-coaching leads us, I've got to be able to do something in between that will give me the best chance to be ready for the next shot. Self-coaching
without being one of those coaches that just is berating you the entire time, which is living in my head right now.
Oh, yeah, it gets way too much.
Yeah, probably. We don't want the kind of Mike Ditka kind of coach who's yelling and screaming, or Bobby Knight type of character. That's who's living in my head right now when I step on the putting green.
Yeah, those are in golf. Our golf coaches don't necessarily berate us, but they fill it oftentimes with so much information. It's very difficult for us to play automatically, mm-hmm. which means to play in our athletic mind. You know, if we look at it this way, Fred, we have three minds. One is the athletic mind, which we are allowed to unleash our imagination, see, feel, hear shots. We have another, which is our thinking mind, that can only do one thing at a time. And it's certainly the last thing it doesn't play any golf. It can allow us, we can help us learn new skills. But it overpowers us if we think about things when we're trying to swing. The swing takes less than 2 seconds. Why in the world should I be thinking about anything other than seeing a targets and feeling swings? Why in the world? So oftentimes our golf teachers and well-intentioned give us a lot of information, which would be up to us to process so we can eventually make so that our swing could be automatic. But if we're still thinking about the information our golf teacher has given us, it's really difficult to have that fluid motion swing, which, of course, we saw all weekend, didn't we? We see the great players at Eastlake. And, of course, I watched very carefully, on Victoria Island, rooting for Scott McCarron, who's my guy for so long. He had a chance to win that. But those swings are fluid and beautiful. And that didn't happen overnight. You know, they went through a process of learning how to play with see, feel, and trust their swings. Of course, we coach in a different way if we want to help people understand this whole internal feedback mechanism.
Yep. I'm listening to and I'm thinking about the round that I had just this past weekend. And I was getting to a point where I was losing too many balls off the tee. Everything else was going okay except for the putting part. But and so I started, and then of course I became a second swing All-American, right? I would lose a ball on the first swing and go up there and say, just slow everything down, relax, and I'd have a great drive. So then I started going up to the tee box going, okay, I've already lost one ball in my mind. I'd say to myself, I've already lost one ball. Just make this your second swing, and I'd have a nice drive off the tee. Help.
Well, you know, if I expect a person to be able to play in their imagination, then I have to set up training so they learn more about their imagination and the internal feedback mechanism. For example, Friday, I work with the University of Civic golf team. I'm still hang out at the university, of course, and John Cook, the coach, has enlisted my aide. So what we're going to do today with the players is to help them get in touch with their internal feedback mechanism. So we did quite a few drills, but here's a couple of them. Okay, Fred, what I'd like you to do this time is I want you to step up. I want you to have a target. I want you to have an image of the target. Now, people see different things. Some people see the whole shape of a shot. Some people see just the start of the trajectory. Some people see it land. Some people just see the target. But what I want you to do is pick up the visual image, walk into your dress position, swing, and see how long you're able to keep that image while you're swinging. All right, that's all. So you swing, no judgment, just tell me. So you swing and you turn back and, I was able to keep the image of the target the whole way through. Wow. All right. Next time, I watched the shot. It went high right. The person, how'd you do that time with the image? I lost the image right about before I was coming to impact. Where did your concentration go then? Well, I was wanting to make sure that my swing was coming down in the right plane. Wow. Maybe if you'd have kept the image, let's try it again and keep the image and see if that helps you, trust your swing. So would they get to do this a number of different times, and what they do, they get to practice, keeping an image and finding out what the visual image is most effective for them. And it's no judgment on the shot, just how well they kept this image. Because that's part of this internal feedback system, visual. But then we will take, now we're going to work on kinesthetic, the fluidness and tension-free of the swing. So I want you to swing this time, Fred. And I want you to swing. And if it's free of tension, that would be a 10. Mm-hmm. And you turn around and tell me. If it's a 1, that means you probably held on to it for dear life. So you swing, you turn around and tell me, but more importantly, you're telling yourself, wow, that was about a 7. I felt a little bit of tension right about at impact. Okay. So we're working on 2. 1, we have what? visual. Now we're on kinesthetic. And so the next drill that we'll do, I'll stop for a second, take a breath. You might have a question.
You. No. No, please keep going. I have many questions, but I don't want to break your train. Go.
Well, okay, that's two. Now we get to, now what I'd like you to do, I want you to change club. Take your 8-iron now. And I want you to close your eyes at impact. About 10 years ago, Scott McCarron and his caddy, in fact, he has the same caddy now, we used to close our eyes all the way through. They'd say, we're going to close our eyes at impact. And when you close your eyes at impact, anybody that's listening to this, you can try this. You have about 50% more recognition of what happens at impact. It's amazing what happens.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. And so all you do is tell me this time and yourself, what did it feel like at impact? If you had a real free release, that's a 10. Mm-hmm. If you held on and it shanked it, that's a 2. So you just swing and you tell me what you felt. Now, you can see how this leads to self-coaching. Because now I've learned to really recognize the feel and impact. And also there's a sound, of course. I've got those two. Others. I have the auditory and the tactile, which is the touch. So I'm playing. And I hit a ball high right. And I say to myself, I'm aware now. Huh. I held on. Well, I don't have to fix my swing. I have to fix the way I execute. Okay. Come on, Glenn. Come on, Fred. Let's let this one go next time. So, but into our training process of inner game training, we have to go through these drills. You know, we have, 8 or 9 of them to help people develop awareness of their internal feedback system. Because that's the system in which we play.
Right.
We don't, yeah. So that's what I would have you do. Now, as you develop this awareness of your internal feedback system, you place this into your pre-shot routine. You might find out that, boy, I'm really visual. So I'm back behind the ball. I really have to connect to my target. And I really have to see. In fact, I see the whole shot. So that's going to be a really important part of my pre-shot routine. So I keep that image. I go into my dress position and I keep that image. Now, another person is also visual, but they really like to feel that fluid motion. So when they step in, not only they're seeing the target, they're feeling the swing in advance. Hmm. Anyway, so that moves us, the self-discovery of developing awareness of an internal feedback system to put into our pre-shot routine. But now, you can also see how this, you were going to say something, go ahead.
All part of the pre-shot routine we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to, I don't want to advance the conversation beyond where you are, because I'm sure that there's a post-shot routine as well.
That's the next step.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead. Or continue where you were. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, the post-shot routine is the awareness of, let's say that I really release a great trusting swing. Hit a nice, beautiful, soft draw into a back left pin. I love it. It's in my memory. It's right there. It's never going to go away. I can really feel that shot. Let's say that I was stepping up to hit a soft draw to that back left pin. And wow, it went high right. So my awareness and my post-shot routine is, you lost the image of the target. And you start thinking about your swing. Mm-hmm. So what I need to do immediately is recognize that. Don't judge it. Just describe it. And if I'm out there in the fairway with my 7-iron, take the swing you wanted with that nice fluid motion. And now I've refocused. We call it reviewing, replacing, refocusing. Now I'm ready for the next shot. And you better do it quickly. Yeah. So that you're ready for the next shot.
Sure. But that you have time to for the next shot. Obviously, you have time to think about it, and
so maybe not to think about it, maybe to be aware, so I can.
Okay.
Yeah, because in our limbic system, the one we're talking about, it works so fast. It's what we watch athletes or anybody, performers, dancers, singers, or watch anybody that performs beautifully. Well, they're in that system that works at least 1,000 times faster. At
right.
least. Yeah. And so if indeed that's what we want to do, be when we play, a certain portion of our training needs to for us to train and enhance, you know, our internal feedback system. That's our imagination. So we can play with our athletic mind.
Makes total sense. Makes total sense. I know that it's so often for me, what might happen is that I'll do target golf. I'll stand behind the ball. I'll look at the 3 points down the line from the ball to the final resting place, final target. And then I'll focus on something as small as I can in the distance, which is the line that I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. And I really try to fine tune that target. You know, I'm not just looking at the mountaintop. I'm looking at the patch of brown inside the patch of green on that mountaintop. I try to focus. But then I'll step up to the ball, and all of a sudden all I see is the ball. I'll turn my head. I'll take another peek out to the distance to see that target. But I honestly can't tell you how long I can keep that image in my head before I start focusing on club head position, ball position, feet position, backswing, you know, on and on and on.
Well, all of that's got to be, it has to be automatic. You can't be thinking about any of that stuff. Look, it doesn't take long to lock into a target. The target doesn't move. The target doesn't necessarily have to be a finite target, a specific one. Because some people see shapes. They just see a big wide shape. And they see it coming and landing. What we have to discover, Fred, is how you see best. Which is the most effective way for you. Because it's not the same for everybody. I can't tell you what you should see. But you're going to tell me what you see when you trust your swing. What do I see? And this can happen at all levels. You know, this is obviously the players that play at the highest level have, you know, wonderful imaginations, and they see. They're quite astute visually. But so is a guy, say, 8 handicap. He sees things too. But we want to find out what you see best. And then we can lock in that particular visual image for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with the feeling of swing that matches it. What do you feel? Some people feel a fluid motion, beautiful fluid motion. And some people feel it's a little shorter. But whatever it is, it's the whole movement of the swing. It's much like creative writers. You're a creative journalist. They see things in paragraphs. They don't write sentences. They write paragraphs. So when we're playing our best, we're playing in paragraphs. So whatever we feel in our swing, it's the whole motion.
I need to write that one down. When we play our best, we see things in paragraphs. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's beautiful.
Or the jazz, you know. I've done a lot of, you know, I'm a music fan.
Sure.
And I love jazz and the improvisation of jazz.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Stan Getz, the great tenor sax player. I met him. I guess the person that lived with him was Bill Walsh's secretary for 5 years.
Oh, really?
And Stan Getz came and was a visiting professor at Stanford for 1 year. Yeah. And why did he leave? He left because there was nobody to play with. And when we talked to Stan Getz, he's a great technician. Great technician, as great golfers are. But when he plays, he's in this wonderful mind of imagination. And that's how they improvise. They don't know where is that, are they going, but they do know. And so the
athlete. Yeah, but of course, that is after years of technical training. I mean, I don't think that somebody who has never had, let me just say, art lessons or just experience with art can paint an abstract that would be appreciated by many others, where it takes someone who has, how am I trying to express this? Are you seeing where I'm going with this? You can't do jazz. You can't do improvisation until you know. You can't work out of the box until you understand the box.
I said Stan Getz was a great technician.
Right.
Great technician. And obviously in golf, look, don't ever misunderstand me. Anybody's listening to this. Technique's important. Okay. And they have the right stuff. Technology is amazing. But it's only the price of admission to high-level play. And we have to go beyond it. But don't misunderstand me. It's important. It's important to have a grip that works. It's important to understand some of the technique of... I mean, look, I know many, many really, really good golf teachers. Many good. And the ones that I value the highest are the ones that can go beyond. And go beyond can also, you know, help people unleash their imagination. But obviously, technique is essential. Yeah. But look at, Fred, our golf industry bombards us with technology and ways to fix our scene. Arnold Palmer is one of the first to say the technology has overwhelmed us. It's overwhelmed us. This golf swing is really pretty simple. Why are we making it so damn complicated? Now, and we do. And we have a great time because that's the stream of cash. That's where the golf industry makes money, by selling you equipment and fixing your swing. Do they make any money by teaching you to use your imagination? I don't know. But I know
Probably not. Yeah, do they make any money having you use old clubs and old technology? No, they want you to keep changing.
Oh, it's amazing. It's look at, I can hit a ball. I can hit five shots on a TrackMan. I can find out all kinds of things, right?
Right.
Everything. Yeah. All the stuff. Probably my middle name as well. Yeah.
You mentioned Arnold Palmer a moment ago, and as we're recording this, he passed away just yesterday. And it's almost impossible to get into a conversation about golf this week without remembering Arnold and the impact that he had on the game. And he must have been coming along and really making his mark when you were a young golfer as well. Can you share any stories about the influence that he had on you and your game and your philosophies on teaching?
Well, I think if he is right dead center, you know, that if you read all the, I mean, there's all kinds of information about him now, all his quotes and et cetera, but he was always saying that we're making this way too complicated. Look at the guy had charisma. He was sexy as hell. He really could play the game. He played with courage, you know, with passion. And he was just so much fun to watch. I mean, he went for it. And he was kind of unorthodox, wasn't he?
Kind
of unorthodox, yeah. Like some other players are. But, man, he could really, I mean, he made contact. He was wonderful human being. I remember one scene when he was playing in the AT&T a long time ago, and I was following John Flannery, who was one of my first players. This is sometime in the early 90s.
Okay.
And I was standing in the trees, and he was walking by. I was standing in the trees, and he looked over at me. He looked right in my eye, then gave me a wink and a thumbs up. So he did that so often. I mean, that's a true story. That's
wow.
The way he was.
And but he didn't. You had never met him before.
No,
he didn't know you.
No.
But he just made contact.
Oh yeah.
Even the slightest contact, and you feel touched.
Well, he made everybody feel special
right.
When you're with him. That's what great teachers do, great coaches.
Right.
When you're with them, you know, you are the most important person that I'm working with at the moment. And Arnold was beautiful in that way.
So we live in a very different time than when Arnie came of age, where... You know, we would hear about Arnie, and he built Arnie's Army based on newspaper reports and possibly television recaps, because you weren't, you know, right now we live in obviously the 24-hour news cycle, which is with the internet's turned into a 24-second news cycle. Things change so rapidly and so fast. What was it about Arnie that you remember at that time that just had his charisma, had his magnetism jump through the pages of the newspaper and jump through the radio reports and the newspaper and the television reports?
Well, yes. Did I mention that before? Yes, he is as you said, he's a charismatic, great sex appeal, courageous, you know, loved competition, was so acknowledged. The other people he had competed with, I think he loved the action. And I'm not sure it was always all about the winning. I think he just embraced the opportunity, you know, to be a closer,
mm-hmm.
to be there. Because I mean, he had some heartbreaks, though. And of course, he has some great, great triumphs. But anybody that lays it on the line, like Arnold Palmer, or the great teams that we watch, or the coaches, or the athletes, the ones that truly, truly are blessed with the opportunity to know that they embrace the opportunity to compete with the best. And they love that. And they love that more. I think they love that more than the winning. And I think that he clearly, to me, personified that.
Right, right. Do you remember the time where he was at his best, and that even with his losses, I think that he was so endearing that people would feel his pain and feel like they lost as well. Have you witnessed any other athletes in your time since that compare to what Arnie's Army was like?
Oh, teams or athletes?
Yeah. Either or. I mean, could be the Celtics of the 50s or Tiger Woods or Mike Tyson or Muhammad Ali. I mean, there's so many different.
How about the
Arthur Ashe?
How about the Seahawks? When on the 2-yard line and they throw the interception. And so Pete Carroll is a good friend, of course.
Yes.
So let's talk about that and how he responded. So 2 days after that, Martin Lauer from Today's Show was interviewing. It's a great interview.
Matt Lauer, yeah.
Yes, it's a great interview. And he started the interview by saying, Pete, I want you to know, when you made that call, I thought it was the worst call in the history of football. So Pete Carroll said, not the worst call, maybe the worst result.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what did you do in that, at that moment? He said, I had about 15 seconds. He said, the next thing I had to do to make sure that we put this in perspective, and it took some time to do that. But the thing about it is, if they're going to be judged on one play, well, let me retract. Let me go back, because you asked me an important question. I would say that that the Pete Carrolls and the Arnold Palmers and other athletes say it's not about whether we won it or lost it. It was about having the opportunity, embrace the opportunity to be there and to be there and make the play and give yourself the chance. It's not whether the play worked, it's having the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Look at, they talk about closers. The closer is that guy that comes in and the Giants are looking for one, by the way.
Yeah.
All the interviews we do, and I've written about it, the closers are not always the best players. But the closers are the ones that want the ball. They want to have the opportunity. And it's not about winning it. It's having the opportunity. Mm. So Arnold personified that. He wanted the opportunity to be in the action, always. And he responded, you know, beautifully. And it wasn't always the green jacket. But he was always had the green jacket personality because he always just absolutely embraced that opportunity. Mm. Thanks for giving me a chance to say that.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for saying that. That's beautiful. Yeah. That's beautiful. Let's let everybody know about the book, too, Winning the Battle Within. How about a brief summary for those who've not heard about it?
Well, Winning the Battle Within was a life's work, and it chronicles, you know, the whole process that we need to go through in order for us to give ourselves the best chance. The last chapter is getting to the winner's circle, and the first chapter is the introduction, is what all the steps that we need to take to give ourselves the best chance. It's never a guarantee. It's just, I can guarantee you, if you follow these principles, you will give yourself the best chance.
And that's the critical element. Give yourself a chance to be there.
Yeah.
Right. No, I growing up, I always used to say, I don't necessarily want a Cadillac. I just want to be able to afford the option.
I like that. That's really good.
Got so any other books coming down the pipeline?
Well, I'm collaborating with Eric Jones, you know, the long drive champion. He may have been on one of your broadcasts. I don't know. He's an exceptional guy. And we're about 80% done. Actually, I hope he's listening because the ball's in his court at the moment.
I'll reach out to him and we'll get him on the show. We'll definitely do that.
Oh, he's good. He's good. He's he won the long drive Masters Championship in 2004. Then he repeated in 2012. In fact, I have a great podcast of my interview with him. You know, what did he do, you know, in order to give himself the best chance? Now, he hits it really far, and he's not a big guy. And now, of course, he's a teacher of golf. And he's really explored and taken the whole thing about sports psychology and teaching technique and bringing them both together. The name of the book is Trust Your Swing.
Hmm. Yeah. And when can we hopefully see it? Eric, are you paying attention? Ball's in your court. When do we get to see this book?
Oh, yeah. You know, I think... for sure by February.
Okay, of 2017.
Yeah. It was about 80% done.
Okay, yeah. So then in February 2017, you better expect to hear back from me to get you back on the show.
Oh, I'd love that.
That would be great.
This
it's
has been
so good.
Anytime I have opportunity to talk about this, you know, I'm absolutely delighted, and I appreciate you giving me the invitation. You know, you've been doing this for 10 years?
Yeah.
Well, it's morphed into quite a deal.
Thank you. Podcasting has morphed into quite a deal because when I first contacted you in 2006 and said podcast, I'm sure you said, what?
Yeah.
It's like, what are you talking about? What's a podcast? So, yeah, I've definitely watched this thing grow, and podcasting has taken front seat to many other forms of media. It's awesome. I love it.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
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 Well, so remember though, that technology is only the price of admission to the various high level play. Doesn't matter what the endeavor is.
Right.
And the stuff that you do, because you're beautifully spontaneous, by the way.
Thank you.
And that takes practice.
Well, yeah, it definitely does. And I'm going to repeat that and ask, probably call you when my wife says, can you just stay focused on one thing? No, but Glenn said I'm beautifully spontaneous.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome, Fred.
Glenn, it's always great to talk to you. I thank you so much for your time. It's great to see you this time. Yeah, this is, I think, the first time we've done this through video.
But, I know. Yeah.
But thank you. You look great. And I wish you all the best and can't wait for the next book to come out.
Thank you, Fred.
I think it's so interesting how the Northern California residents, we get so excited about summer at the end of August. The hottest times of the year for us is late September and early October. And this past weekend in 90-plus degree heat, no humidity, but still it was over 90 degrees, I played with my friend Neil at Mare Island, which used to be a naval base. I think it was for submarines. Anyway, being built in 1892, they claim to have the oldest golf course west of the Mississippi River. Originally, it was just 9 holes, but they expanded years ago with a design done by the late Pacific Rim course architect Robin Nelson. For those premium subscribers who have access to our archives, Robin was featured on episode number 136. And as a reminder of its military days, Mare Island, they have 10 ammunition bunkers scattered throughout the golf course property, which is actually really cool when you kind of stumble upon them. It's like, whoa! Obviously, there were huge guns pointing out towards the bay here. I posted some pictures of the incredible views of the San Francisco Bay from the golf course. You can find them in the Golf Smarter Facebook group or on our app, so please check those out. To get all the new episodes automatically on your phone, don't forget to download the free Golf Smarter app for iOS and Android. And if you have any questions, comments, or you know, things that you want to suggest, come on, I can get that word out. Suggestions. Click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.